Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. It's great to have John Cozy back. John is my guest today. I'll get to John in a moment. John, if you'll bear with me. John has had some other things on his mind, to say the least, for the last number of weeks. But it's great to have him back, and hopefully in full force. He certainly shows it by the latest article that he's written, and we'll discuss it today in the program and other things that John has on his mind. If we can get hold of Ralph Pointer, I want to discuss briefly with Ralph a situation that came up in the last 24 hours or so. It happened yesterday. I was alerted by email. The email information about it is circulating. It's very important. It's an issue that regular listeners to this program are very well aware of. They may not be aware of the latest information, and I can sum it up in the headline to an article I wrote and got it out this morning. I wanted to write it. I didn't want to sit on it. I wanted to get it right out. And the title says, Federal Judge Sentences Lynn Stewart to Death. I think that makes my point. Lynn petitioned for compassionate release. Regular listeners know she has stage 4 cancer. She's wrongfully in prison. She's been there over 3 years. She's dying. She's dying. I wrote an earlier article last March. The title was, Obama Wants Lynn Stewart Dead. No question. Obama wants Lynn Stewart dead. Well, the federal judge, John Codal, said when he resentenced Lynn, he originally sentenced her with tongue-in-cheek. His words showed that he was very uncomfortable giving her 10 minutes in prison. But he did it. He was pressured. He had to do it. His career was on the line. Well, he could have gotten another career and been an honorable man, but he sentenced Lynn to 16 months in prison. When the appeals court pressured him that he didn't do enough, he upped it to 10 years. 10 years? 10 years. Compassionate release should be automatic in a situation such as what Lynn finds herself in. Former Attorney General Ramsey Clark says she meets every legal, ethical, and moral qualification to be released straight away. Should have happened months ago. It hasn't been. Her lawyers petitioned in court. It went back to Judge Codal, District Federal Court Judge. He turned her down. He gave a weasel word excuse. Weasel words. They don't hold water. Lynn remains in prison. The fight goes on, and I discuss what happened in my article. I explain the terrible wrong that was done to her and explain the way it was done to others, and I gave one example of a woman in my article. My article should be very easy to find. I don't think there's another with that title. Federal judge sentences Lynn Stewart to death. Google it. You can find it right now. Well, better still, find it when the program is over. And you see what I mean. I gave an example of another woman who served 20, it's in my article, but she served 25 years for a wrongful 80-year prison sentence. Wrongfully imprisoned for 80 years. She served 25. She developed a very rare uterine carcinoma. She was let out from prison 3 weeks before she died. 3 weeks. I'll mention her name, Marilyn Buck. It's in my article. And I quoted her verbatim. And she explained, they kept her in just long enough to be sure if they let her out, it was past the point of no return. And 3 weeks after her release, she died. That's what they're doing to Lynn. Unless mass outrage can possibly stop this, I'm committed. There's no question Ralph is committed. There's no question many others are committed. And I hope listeners to this program will be as committed and rally others and get behind a worldwide campaign to get Lynn free. Don't think we got Ralph. John, I know you're there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome back. It's great to have you. Well, you.
No, thank you.
You know what's going on. It's a horrible situation. It's a terrible thing to be ill. You certainly know it. You've been through your own ordeal. But it's certainly a great gap between being ill and wondering if you're going to survive. And that really is a very serious situation. But let's talk about what's on your mind, including your latest article. And you always write a great article, and I love discussing them on the program. And you call it Poisonous Veracity. Swat that lie. Well, I swat a lot of them all the time, John. Talk about your latest article.
Well, I was sitting around trying to recuperate, and I was thinking about sentences which quite often make no sense at all or have no support, factual support, that are commonly accepted by almost everybody. And I wondered about it. I related it to the Russian experience during the Revolution. They boarded up all the churches. And two generations later, when the Russian Revolution was reversed, they tore the boards off the churches and people flocked to the churches. And I thought to myself, well, isn't that strange? Because in the First World War, the war that gave rise to the revolution, prelates carried icons in the trenches, intoning all sorts of prayers for the safety of the Russian troops who then went on to get slaughtered. And in the Second World War, Russians did the same thing to the Germans, slaughtered the Germans without the help of religious prelates. So I thought to myself, isn't that strange that you get beaten calling on God and you succeed by not calling on God, but you call on God instead of changing your ways? And it's just one of those strange things. And, you know, I related it to the expression, in God we trust. And I thought, well, you know, there's an expression that doesn't make any sense. Because you can't just trust. You have to trust in the thing you trust to do something. And what is it that we trust God to do when we put in God we trust on our money? I don't know. I don't have any idea what we trust God to do.
John, I don't have any idea what the connection is between God and money.
No, I don't either. But, you know, the interesting thing is, here's a sentence, in God we trust, we print it on our money, and it really doesn't even make any sense to say in God we trust, because you have to trust somebody to do something. You can't just trust somebody. So I began to look into this business of sentences which made no sense or which had no backing. And I discovered that there are a lot of them. As a matter of fact, they're probably the ones that govern our lives most, are sentences like this that don't really have any backing or quite often
John, your opening example was a good one. I think Liz is very familiar with that. And your opening line was any Roman ever gullible enough to believe that Romulus and Remus founded Rome after being suckled by wolves?
Yeah. You know, yeah, that's the kind of thing I think. I related that. I think it was Lloyd George, a British diplomat, who asked, why do people say they ought to defend a country that they don't own a single square inch of? You know, and I, again, that's one of these sentences. Well, you know, it's a duty or an honor or whatever it is to defend your own country.
John, you just referenced my memory on a line. You mentioned the Lloyd George, which to me brings up the British Empire. And this was George Galloway, the British MP, maybe the only honest one in the British Parliament. But he was talking about the British Empire and talking about an old Irishman that he mentioned the Empire with it. And he said something like, well, you know, the sun never sets on the British Empire. And the old Irishman said, yeah, the reason is because God... God doesn't trust the bridge of the dark.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That's about what he... That's not exactly the line that he had, but it was pretty close to it.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, I was looking into these sentences, and I discovered that these sentences are really the basis for most cultures, most civilizations. I didn't say it in the article, but I will eventually relate it to the to economics. Capital economics is made out to be a science, but in fact it's nothing but a way of organizing society to benefit some people. And all of the basic theories of or maxims of capitalist economics are sentences which have no backing or quite often don't even make any sense. And yet we continue to believe them, and we believe them, you know, even in the face of the evidence that they don't have any backing or make any sense. And that's very curious, because if that's true, if the human race is so conditioned that it relies upon these kinds of maxims to govern its actions, then the human race is doomed. We're just wasting our time trying to save the world.
John, we're taught, and you know this so well, we're taught so many myths. I mean,
yeah.
things that absolutely have no relationship to facts, and we're just bombarded with them, and we live with them. And people, you know, you repeat this stuff over and over again, and people believe this stuff. It's absolutely astonishing. They're so conditioned to the myths that when they hear something important, really important, that's the truth, it just doesn't go down well. It doesn't sound right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, that was the basis for the article, and squat that lion, and I picked out a few lies that I wanted to squat and swatted them. The article didn't have much of an impact on readers. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure anybody read it.
I didn't have any idea how many people read my articles, and I don't really try to check. Once in a while, I'll Google the title of my article, and I'll see repostings of it, but I get so busy, John, in what I'm doing,
yeah,
that I just don't have a chance to do it. And today is a good example where I'm really in overdrive. There's so much that I wanted to address today that I wrote the article about Lynn. I literally wanted to get that out as fast as I could. Usually I'll write an article and I'll get it out the next day. But once in a while I think something is so time sensitive, I don't want to sit on it even overnight. I want to get it out immediately. And I wrote this and I got it out this morning. And I wanted to get it out as quickly as I could. And there were other things that I spotted. Usually I wake up and I'm not certain what I want to write about on a given day until I check the usual places I go to for my daily due diligence, and I see what's going on, and I see issues that I think are most important that I want to say something about. Sometimes it's a continuation of something I've written one or more times about, like NSA spying or Obama on the stump or on a tour, and I wrote an Obama article this morning. His claim, I don't want to get away from your article, we can get on this a little bit too, but his claim that he like Bill Clinton, he feels your pain. Well, Obama understands that people are upset about NSA spying. At the same time, he says, we don't, quote unquote, we don't have a domestic spying program. Well, every damn fool in the country knows that we have a domestic spying program, but Obama has the gall to think that people are stupid enough that one line out of his mouth and they'll think America has no domestic spying program. So he's come up with a way to reform the program. What's his reform program, John? It's no reform. What's his transparency program? It's no transparency. That's typical Obama reform. So I had to write an article about it, and I just ripped him apart.
Yeah, it's interesting how they changed the argument. The argument, of course, against domestic spying is that it's unconstitutional, and they changed the argument to it's a success. You know, well, sure, it's a success. It's unconstitutional. There's no reason they can't be both of them at the same time. And it's a success because it is unconstitutional.
It very much is unconstitutional. And some months back, well, not that many months back, it might have been in June. I think it probably was in June that I wrote an article that I talked about unconstitutional metadata mining. Metadata mining, sweeping up every bloody thing in sight, doing it domestically, doing it overseas. And it absolutely is unconstitutional. You look at the Bill of Rights amendments, and you can see that the stuff they're using to justify this violates core Bill of Rights amendments, Fourth Amendment, First Amendment, and you can go to other amendments depending on what they do. But there are provisions that are misused from the Patriot Act that gives them some justification, they claim, to do this. But there's no justification at all.
No, there isn't. You know, that's the way government operates now. It changes the parameters of the debate. Nobody's attacking the program by saying it's a failure. Even when we do that, nobody pays any attention. But we're attacking the program, saying that it's unconstitutional, and the response is, but it's successful. Well, so what? Still unconstitutional. That's the way it goes. But anyhow, to get back to my article, I was saying that economics is, capitalist economics at least, is based entirely on these sentences, which have no support or backing, and quite often makes no sense. For instance, the economist Bastet said that French economist said that everybody wants to live off the government, and I thought to myself, well, that's interesting because the only people who manage to do that are career politicians.
And the corporate chieftains who profit very, very greatly, John, from their relationship with the corrupt politicians.
Yeah, but, and it's these guys who say that everybody wants to live off the government. People living off the government saying that everyone wants to live off the government. That's sort of like the liar paradox, the Cretan who says that all Cretans are liars. It's a funny kind of thing, but to get back to the other things, so, you know, one of the things that I guess the world is hooked on. We are, certainly Americans are, that technology is going to be our salvation. And if you look at the facts of really what technology has brought us, it's brought us far more trouble than it's have been helpful. And the spying program is a case in point. Without telephones and the internet and computers, that program would be impossible to run. And we believe in the technology, but we don't like the programs that it results in, and we're calling ourselves literally believing that Romulus was suckled by wolves. We're being suckled by wolves too. The kind of thing, people don't pay attention to what they hear or say in print. They read it and think they know that it makes sense, and think it makes sense when, as a matter of fact, it makes no sense at all.
John, it's sure true. It's true. And it just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah, and there's no way. I don't know. I can't think of any way to stop it, because you know, if the people promoting the view won't look at the evidence, the contrary evidence, then you know, it's hopeless. It's utterly hopeless. I don't know what to do about it.
Well, I tell people to tune out the usual sources that lie and present misinformation and present junk food news. It doesn't have to be explained to people who listen to this program. The people who listen need to tell others who don't listen to this program that this and other programs like it are the ones that people should follow to understand what really is going on and the terrible harm that it does to so many people. And this is the way the system works.
Yeah, and the system is planned to work that way, of course. This system didn't come about by chance. It came about by people with power imposing it on people without power, and it's become so ingrained in the minds of people that I don't think that there's any way to extirpate it now. We're stuck in that regime, I guess I want to call it. But you know, there's the stupid things that we hear all the time, and people not only believe them but accept them. Like by buying this product for so and so dollars, you save so and so. Well, no, you don't. You know, I mean, it's an outright contradiction. You don't save anything by spending, and yet people listen to that. It becomes so prevalent now that they believe it. Every time they go shopping, they're saving money. Of course, they're in debt up to their ears, but that's the way they do it. It's that kind of thing that occasioned the article, at any rate. And
well, it really is true. Well, you remember right after 9/11, one of the comments that George Bush made to people was, "Go on with your normal life. Go out and shop."
Shop, yeah.
Supposedly, America was attacked. Well, America was attacked. We just named the wrong villain, but America was attacked. And George Bush's solution was, "Go out and shop."
Well, sure. I mean, that was the whole idea behind the attack. I'm having a little trouble making a mental connection here.
You're doing fine, John. I'm following you very, very well, but believe me, I understand. Coming back and getting into full strength again, you know, it's like an athlete. I don't really follow sports the way I used to, but I've gone through physical rehab myself after either an injury or one time substantial surgery, and it takes some time, and you got to get your body back into good shape. The only difference between us and the athlete, John, is nobody pays us to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys make so much money that they have every incentive not only to want to do it, but to do it as fast as possible so they can get back out there. They're probably going to get their paychecks anyway, but they want to get back out there and do what they want to do. And we do it because, well, I mean, we just want to get healthy again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but I soon have the confusion and the pain go away. But
it's on my mind as well, John. And as we age, the body just doesn't work the way it used to. I talk about the fact that I'm not as swift as I used to be. Well, my goodness, you get up in years. It's like a machine, you know, it wears down. It doesn't quite work the same way anymore. But I want to keep mine going as long as possible. And there are a lot of things on my mind, and especially what I'm doing. What I'm doing energizes me, hopefully to keep me younger than I would otherwise. You know, the old idea that if you overrest, you rust, and I really feel that way. As far as what's going on in the world, John, I'm very obsessed with the wrongful information, the misinformation that we're told, so people believe what I call the big lies. I mean, there are all kinds of lies, and the biggest ones we'll call the big, there are lots of big lies, and there were lots of things that are lesser lies. But it, I'm also concerned about the stuff, the very important stuff that gets suppressed, that never gets reported. And I wrote an article. I lose track of my days, John. It was either yesterday or the day before. But a big issue in northern Syria, where these al-Nusra fighters, you could call them an al-Qaeda spinoff, even worse than al-Qaeda, but extremist Islamo-fascists, they slaughtered in a Turkish portion of a Kurdish portion of northern Syria, I think in the northeast, but what they want is control of the entire northern part of Syria, or as much of it as possible, to establish an Islamo-fascist state, and they slaughtered 450 Kurdish, mostly women and men. I'm sorry, mostly women and children. The men who were there, who tried to interfere, they just killed them on the spot, or brutalized them in some way.
Yeah.
But they took the women and children. I think they took a lot of them captive. They abducted them, and they killed on the order of 450. And there's video of this. What information came out in the major media? I spotted nothing. I'm not certain if anything came out in Europe.
Yeah. Of course, you see it all the time. A month or so ago, before my surgery, I was reading articles about how the opposition's progress in Syria. And then suddenly the opposition wasn't making any progress, but you weren't reading about it. They quit talking about Syria. That's lying by omission is what it is, and happens all the time. To get back to my piece, I also wanted to relate this to something else. In the 13th century, we had Christian crusades against the Middle East, at least 8 of them, maybe more. And the Christians were never really able to succeed, so that the people fighting to restore God's control over God's birthplace was a failure. Eight or more times. And it occurred to me that the war on terror is the same crusade. We're trying to restore Christian hegemony over the Middle East, and I don't think it has a possible chance of succeeding. You can't kill 2.5 billion people to establish hegemony without killing yourself. What's going on? So we're involved in kind of a ninth crusade or something of that sort going on, and it is a religious war. There's no question about it. The trouble is, there are no good guys in this religious war. I mean, the Muslim opposition to Western-style government and economics has its own cruelties. They're just as bad, and it's a frightful thing to contemplate, really, when you think about it. Anyhow, all of those things were wrapped up in that piece, and I perhaps didn't do a very good job of writing it. Given my condition, I'm surprised I got it off at all, but
You were pretty close to the John Cozy I know, John. When I had my last surgery about 10 years ago, about the last thing on my mind was, well, I wasn't writing then, so certainly writing wasn't on my mind. And thankfully, I was able to read, and I was reading voluminously, including my time in the. What are you going to do in the hospital besides, you know, see the doctors and nurses when they come around, doing physical therapy and that kind of stuff? And the idea of sitting around watching television all day just didn't appeal to me. So I brought 3 books with me. And I read them, and at least I did something productive. But if I had been writing then, which began afterwards, a few years afterwards, the last thing on my mind would have been to sit down and start writing an article. I just couldn't imagine doing anything like that. And at the beginning, coming back from a surgery, you spend a lot more time on the therapy. I know I did. And as I progressed further and further into it, I needed to spend less time. But I spent an awful lot of time on the physical therapy chores. And it was very important, including trekking out to a physical therapy place for regular sessions. So it was a major thing to go through. John, we're at the bottom of the hour. I hear the music going. Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll pick it right up. Talking with John Cozy. John, I'll give you something else to worry about, and everybody listening to this program, we're all familiar with the disaster at Fukushima 2.5 years ago in Japan. Well, here's a little blurb. I wrote many articles on the disaster, and a few I wrote afterwards. The most recent one, maybe 2 or 3 months ago. It's on my mind to do another one, but here's a startling number that I didn't know about. Japan's Ministry of Industry estimates that since the disaster in March 2011, about 300 tons of contaminated groundwater have been flowing into the Pacific Ocean every single day. How's that for a number, John?
Yeah, I read that too. It's shocking, but it's certainly not surprising.
It's not surprising, and I heard another blurb, too, that the disaster that's been covered up, so people don't know just how bad it is, has been called by some experts uncontainable. Uncontainable. There's no way they're going to stop this.
Yeah. I'm wondering, but of course, that's the story of the human race. There's a comment that I want to make about American spying, this spying program. When America faces a problem, it decides to gather information, but look for needles in haystacks. But what it does, instead of looking for needles in haystacks, what it does is create haystacks. So that they're spending all this time sorting out, shards of hay in this haystack, which may or may not contain any information. It's a strange sort of thing, and that's the same kind of thing that's going on, I think, at Fukushima. You can't tell the people the truth because the truth is too disastrous to make known. I don't know what. I don't know what the fish can do about it, but unless they have some plan that we don't know about, it's an uncontainable disaster.
I was told by a friend who also has some expertise on this subject that whenever it rains, here I'm in Chicago, John, you're down in Texas. I'm not certain what the difference is between where you are and where I am, but my friend said whenever it rains in Chicago, either stay indoors or be sure you have an umbrella. And if you track over wet sidewalk or pavement and you go back indoors, you'll be bringing radioactivity with you into your home or apartment or whatever. And I've never forgotten that. I don't know what you're supposed to do about it, John, because the radioactivity that you may have on the soles of your shoes, you've also got it in the drinking water. I don't know how you get radioactivity out of drinking water. I guess you don't do it. I guess it's stuck there. So when you take a drink of water, you can't boil it out. You can't get rid of it. I guess you're drinking it, so you're literally irradiating yourself just from what happened at Fukushima alone, plus the buildup of everything that happened prior to that. Chernobyl was practically a non-event compared to Fukushima.
Of course, that's the tragedy of unintended consequences. You know, with science and technology, we've talked ourselves into relying on to save the world, and in fact, it's destroying the world. The kind of thing we're doing today isn't helpful. Talking used to be cheap until Bell invented the telephone.
Well, we really are destroying the world, John, and we're doing it in so many ways. Just ecocide alone is destroying the world. But I follow whatever really is hot. In the Middle East, all the time that I've been writing, the Middle East has been hot. So I literally follow the Middle East, and I write more articles on the Middle East besides writing about Obama and key stuff going on here at home, including police state laws and the rest of it. But these are the things I write most of my articles on. I've written hundreds of articles on these topics. So what's going on in Syria? I don't know how many people understand what's going on in Egypt right now, where there was a coup d'etat, when John Kerry says that the coup d'etat was a way to restore democracy, and people believe that kind of stuff. I mean, that literally is the quote's right out of his mouth, restoring democracy. But there's virulent anti-American sentiment in Egypt because of U.S. interfering in Egyptian affairs. There's a possibility there'll be a civil war breaking out. There have already been hundreds of people killed since the elected president, not as cleanly and pristinely as an election should be by a long shot, President Morsi. But he was elected through the process, bad as it was, flawed as it was. On July 3rd, he was ousted by a military coup. There were nominal civilian leaders appointed, a president, a prime minister, other officials. They have no legitimacy whatsoever, but they're the ones in place. And I speak of what's called Egypt's Supreme Council of the Military. Supreme Council of Military Force, SCAF it's called. Supreme Council, anyway.
Yeah.
Military and its SCAF. This is the ruling power of Egypt. A general sits at the top. There are other key military officials involved. And this is the junta that's ruling Egypt right now.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's gonna have American relations or not, but they were all trained by Americans.
Oh, indeed, Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. That's what I wanted to say. I was looking for a word with an M in it, not the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. SCAF. SCAF has been around for a very long time, and it's running Egypt. It's very malevolent, extremely brutal. They claim that they've held back, and the nominal president says, well, the time for diplomacy has ended. Well, there have already been hundreds of people killed. There have been many, many hundreds, maybe a couple of thousand wounded. There have been many sitting in prison. I don't know how many. I haven't seen a number, but there could be hundreds sitting in prison. And now he's going to take the gloves off. I'd like to see what it's like when he takes the gloves off. Well, it's the military that takes the gloves off, and the guy who's running the military, a guy named Sisi, was trained in an American war college, plus getting his own training in his own country. This is the guy and the staff below him. He's also the defense secretary, so he's running Egypt. And now they're going to take the gloves off and make things worse. The Egyptians aren't stupid. They know that Americans are pulling the strings. Egypt gets up to about $1.5 billion in mostly military aid every year from Washington. This goes back to the 1979 Camp David Accords. So this is long-standing stuff. It goes on. That kind of money buys a lot of influence, but the people are furious. And I have an article that's written, and it's going out today. It's partly out. I'll get out the rest of it when the program is over. That the people are absolutely furious. They're raging against the military coup. They're raging against the nominal leaders they don't recognize. They're raging against an elected president who was wrongfully ousted by coup. And they're raging against Americans. All kinds of banners. And I quoted about 8 or 10 of them. I mean, ugly stuff they're saying about Obama. They're saying about the U.S. ambassador. There's a new one that Obama has hasn't officially officially nominated yet, but he wants the former Syrian ambassador, a guy named Robert Ford, who was very instrumental in America's war against Syria, to replace the current U.S. ambassador, Ann Patterson, in Egypt. And the Egyptians despise Ann Patterson, and they deplore the idea of Robert Ford coming in to replace him. They know what he is. They know what he stands for. They know what he did in Syria. They want no part of him in Egypt, but apparently he's the guy who's going to be coming. So you've literally got this pot that's on a boil, and it could literally explode into a civil war. Well, Egypt is the largest country in the region. You see a civil war in that country, the estimates, I don't know how many people have been killed in Syria. The estimates don't mean anything, but numbers like 100,000 have been floated around. It could be 200,000. It could be 300,000. Literally dozens of scores are killed every single day. But Egypt is a much bigger country, maybe three times the population. You could see tens of thousands dying in very short order if there's a civil war, and the chance of one is very real. That's just Egypt. There's eruptions going on in Tunisia. We've got trouble going on in Jordan. We've got the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We have what's going on in Iraq. There are car bombings killing people every day. Again, dozens, sometimes scores. This is very ugly stuff, John.
Yes, it is.
And the prospect is that it's more likely to get worse than get better.
That's right. And that's the sense that's what gives you the sense of hopelessness about this all. Here we are. I don't know. You know what people are looking at. You look at all of it's never presented in an aggregate form, but you look at all the killing that goes on in America every day. I don't know. You know how many it is. I'd love to see some journalist dig that out and compare it to the killing that takes place in Iraq every day, and to point out that we're not any better than the rest of the world.
John, we're not any better, and I'll give you one number because I wrote about it. My own city of Chicago. Chicago may be the gun capital of America, at least on a per capita basis, because on average, there is more than one gun-related violent death every single day in Chicago alone. That's an astonishing statistic, and it's something that may get reported a little bit locally, but you certainly don't see it in headlines. You don't see a major story in the New York Times. You don't see TV reports about it. But the idea that more than one a day in Chicago, when maybe 400 people a year die in Chicago killed by gun violence, my God, I mean, this is a calamity. What on earth is being done to address it? Absolutely nothing.
No, and which brings me to my point. America, maybe the world, maybe the human race in general, has adopted the view that you solve problems by killing. We solve foreign problems by going to war and killing people, and the American people solve their personal problems by killing each other. It's all one and the same. We no longer one of the points of the piece I wrote was that in order to have a culture that's run by opinion, and that's all that matters in America these days, and maybe the rest of the world for all I know. I don't know that enough about it to know. But when opinion is the guiding characteristic, you have to have rejected completely. You have to have rejected all the canons of rationality. And I had a piece in there about in the piece there was a sentence about the French Revolution having taken place, and when the powers of Western Europe reversed the French Revolution, they abandoned all the cans of the Age of Reason that Tom Paine and others were promoting at the time, and the result is that there is no truth. There's only opinion nowadays. There's Sunni opinion, and there's Shia opinion, and there's a Jewish opinion, and there's a Christian opinion, and it's all opinion. There's right-wing opinion, left-wing opinion, but there's no substance to any of this. It's all nonsense, and that's what I meant when I said it was poisonous veracity. It's cyanide of the mind. I wish I had thought of that. I would put it deeper, but that's the kind of thing that's going on.
Yeah, that's what's going on, John. And again, I don't follow the major media. I follow the New York Times and Washington Post and Wall Street Journal on a daily basis, so I see the stuff they're writing about, feature stories, commentaries that I like to check, who's writing about what, in case it's something I want to pick up on, most likely to criticize them. And I follow the policy of the newspapers, the editorials, and I just blasted the New York Times. I blast all the time. I just blasted them again in an article. Well, I blasted them on their editorial, the Washington Post and the New York Times, talking about Obama's containment of NSA spying, where the New York Times pathetically called his program, didn't denounce his program, just called it weak. In other words, you know, good try, Obama. You just need to stiffen it up a little bit and make it tougher. And the Washington Post claimed, well, he's off to a good start. Off to a good start.
Yeah.
But I blasted the New York Times on a feature. There are op-eds, and there are feature op-eds, and you can see it when you bring up their homepage, something that they really want to draw readers to. And they had a very hostile anti-Iranian piece by who else? Two Israelis, one a former general.
Yeah. You know, the kind of thing is interesting. When Obama a week or so ago made a speech about ringing out racism or something of that, you know, racism in our society, we all have to get together. And he was talking about it, and he reverted to a metaphor of, you know, ring it out, like you twist the wet bed sheet to get the water out. And I thought to myself, well, isn't that interesting? You know, up until he got something. He makes a claim that there's something we can do about this. Then he switches to metaphor, which tells us nothing. How the hell are you going to ring out racism? You lay people on their backs and twist their feet? I don't know. The whole thing is absurd. And my major interest in it was always linguistic and logical, and there's nothing logical about going from a factual claim to a metaphorical claim. I mean, that's completely idiotic, but that's what he does in his speeches all the time.
Yep, same old, John. One of my favorite expressions I borrowed from an old civil rights worker, same old, you know, business as usual, same stuff goes on, same horror, same outrage, same abuses. It just keeps repeating and repeating. The only good thing about it, John, is it sure gives me a lot to write about.
Yeah, that's right.
I've said it on this program, and I think about it all the time. That most mornings I wake up, and I just have no idea what I'm going to write about. But as soon as I do my daily due diligence, it's very simple to know, because the stuff just pops out of me. And on a day like this, today was a little unusual, because there were about half a dozen things that if I had six arms and six eyes, I could have done a triple the amount that I'll end up doing before the day is over. But I literally, there was so much that just jumped right out of me, and I felt like I have to say something about this, but I can't do everything. Nobody helps me. I do it by myself. We operate as lone rangers, John. So we do what we can by ourselves, and we get as much done as possible. So I'm trying to get as much as I can done, and it really bothers me if the stuff that just jumps at me is really time sensitive, and it's something that I really like to get out, ideally on the same day, which I can't do, but at least the next day. So I'll do the best I can. I managed to get through a few articles today, and I got the one out on Lynn Stewart, and the others I'll complete, and I'll get those out. So I'll be as current as I possibly could be, but I'm a lot more comfortable if I can find a little bit less than I found today. and usually you would think that you would find a little bit less on the weekend than you would on a weekday, but today the stuff just flew at me. Big stuff, important stuff to talk about, and that's what I want to do.
Well, gotta get to it. That's, yeah, I wish I had the strength to get to it. I don't right at the moment have it. I'm not gonna be able to write anything for a day or so.
Well, I'm concerned about, you know, as I get older, and unfortunately I'm not getting any younger, I'm wondering how I'll feel. Oh, I don't know when. I think we all reach a point where maybe it just really hits us that we just can't do what we could do a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So at some point I know I'm going to have to slow down. And when it happens. And I remember seeing it, especially in my mother, who lived to a very ripe old age. And in her youth, she was an absolute dynamo. And the dynamo that I remember growing up changed dramatically as she got well up into her years. It hit her in her a little bit in her late 70s, but mostly the early 80s. So I'm not quite there yet, John, but it concerns me. It's on my mind. And even if I slow down, well, I guess that goes with the territory, but I'd like to at least keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be nice to see some results. I don't have much hope for it, but I would like to see somebody take up some of these important issues and point. You know, one of the things I've said this before. But, you know, one of the thing we need to do is we need to shame the people, and it's kind of thing that you were doing. You started this show with shaming the federal judge that laid down Lynn Stewart's sentence. You know, his name ought to become anathema. You know, in this country, especially in circles that we go around in, and if you make these people ashamed of what they're doing, they might, just might, you know, have a change of heart.
John, I know the way the dirty game is played. It's really not that hard to figure out. But you got a system. It's called the federal court system.
Oh,
you know,
you've
got states, you got local, you got a federal court system. And it's all interconnected. And if a district judge wants to be an appeals judge, he plays the game. And if an appeals judge wants to be a Supreme Court judge, he or she, I should say, they play the same dirty game. So they don't even have to be told what the rules are. They know what the rules are. And they know the system was rigged against people like Lynn and others like her. So he had no choice. Well, he did have a choice. He could have found an honest job, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to suck at the system and just get whatever the benefits it would give to him. And he'll probably move up to the appeals court, whether he'll get, not many make it to the Supreme Court, only 9 get there. So he may not do that, but there's a pretty good chance he might get to the appeals court. He was a Clinton nominee. A Clinton nominee. Well, he could have done the right thing. He didn't do the right thing. He sold Lynn Stewart down the drain twice. Twice. John, we're just about out of time. I want to give you the last word.
And the last word is, you know, I've written about this myself. The common law legal system, which we inherited from Great Britain, has been corrupt ever since it was founded in the early 14th century, I think. There's corruption in the federal courts. Is nothing new, and neither is idiocy. I mean, there's hardly a Supreme Court decision whose logic makes any sense when you analyze it. It's a system of merely repeating over and over and over again the establishment maxims that have led us to the point in the world where we are today. And if that's any indication of where we're going, we're in deep trouble.
We're in a lot of trouble, and you've written plenty about the Supreme Court, and we've talked about your articles on this program, and I've written a few articles on the Supreme Court. It's supremely unsupreme, John.
Yeah.
There's nothing supreme about the Supremes, and you just look at what they do. And the Roberts Court, the Chief Justice, is extremely to the right of center. They literally believe that all the things that you, I, and most people listening to this program believe in, their views and the chosen decisions are exactly polar opposite, and that's the way America is run. It's the same in the Congress. It's the same in the administrations, Republican or Democrats. It's an ugly system, John.
Yes, it is. Yeah. You know, as I was saying, I think I said this to you the last time we were on the radio, which is quite a while now, but things that we inherited from Great Britain are, for the most part, disastrously bad ideas. To say that the sun never set on the British Empire because God didn't trust the Brit in the dark is a really telling truth.
It really is, and you can think of the American Empire with all the troops around the world. I would say whatever was true for the British Empire, John, it goes quadruple at least.
Oh, yeah, sure.
To the U.S. Empire. John, we are plumb out of time. It was great having you back. I hope you'll move steadily ahead to the complete finish line and absolutely total victory, John. Total victory. I'll shoot you an email as soon as I get off here. I look forward to having you back. I missed you terribly, John. It was a gap in my schedule not to have you on, so it was a great treat for me and for listeners to have you back today, John. I look forward to getting you back next month.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, John. Join us every week, Fridays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, weekends, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.